So who wants to start off this Mobile Nations, Mobile World Congress, mobile podcast? We should say mobile once more in the title, I think.
Mobile.
Mobile. So, all right, Phil Nickinson here from Android Central.
Kevin Michalak here from Crackberry.com and the Mobile Nations.
Actually, you've been banned from using your official title at this conference because they wouldn't let you in with it.
Well, eventually it worked out, but yeah, I made the mistake of registering as Chief Media Officer of Mobile Nations, which got rejected because they're like, you're not an editor or writer, well, you want your $3,000.
To be fair, we make fun of you for that title too.
So. Yeah, no, it's true, but eventually it all worked out by the time I landed here, and then I got a press pass, and yay, didn't have to pay money.
Alex Dobie would introduce himself, but he's too busy still working.
I'm blogging.
All right.
Still. I can talk.
Andrew.
I am also here. I'm not blogging. I'm just sitting on my computer trying to look up all these ridiculous number of stories that we've gone over.
Dan, say something.
Yeah, Daniel Urbino here, Windows Phone Central. Barely.
Are you seriously? Come on, you actually had cool news this week.
Well, yeah.
I mean, so did we, but...
It is interesting news, but I'm almost tired of, like, the debate. But we'll still go into it.
We'll talk
about which of the two of you gets to talk about the Nokia X and X Plus?
We will both talk about it, because we're both there. Okay. And finally... Richard, that's you.
Hello.
Richard's like, who?
There's nobody else.
Who, what, me?
So let's set the scene. It's Tuesday night here in Barcelona. We actually had a pretty quick trip. We're leaving
Wednesday morning, Phil.
Wednesday morning.
It's after midnight.
Oh, my God, you're right.
It's late.
So, yeah, we're wheels up in like 10 hours. It's our final night here in Barcelona, so it's about time we all get together. I mean, we've been hanging out all week, but it's been pretty balls of the wall for...
Arrived Saturday afternoon, and it's been handily ever since. We've been just going nonstop.
You're driving a Honda? What?
No, it's another language. Might be Spanish. I don't know.
So, we did a special Galaxy S5 podcast already for AC, so I don't necessarily want us to go through like all the nuts and bolts of that, but I do want to hear from Kevin about BlackBerry. I do want to hear from Dan, and actually I'll talk about it some too because I was there with him. About the Nokia X running Android and all that crap. Alex and Richard spent more time with the GS5, and you guys were at Sony, and we've been at Huawei, and I don't even know where you guys... Seriously, I mentioned this on Google Plus earlier this week, or today, which was also earlier this week. But these guys have all kicked serious ass this week, Kevin. You should give them all a raise.
Everybody should get a raise.
Even me?
Yes.
Cool.
No, really, really good. No, I think...
don't lose the recording.
You know,
looking, you know, often at these events, you know, it's like, well, how many people do we need to go to adequately cover the news and everything?
And it's been a while since you've been here.
I've taken off the last three MWCs, and, you know, I mean, it's not an event I'd love to come to, but it was worth the trip this year.
Raise your hand if it was your first Mobile World Congress. Somewhere out there, like 30 people listening to this, just raise their hand, by the way.
Only 30.
Andrew and Richard, it's your first times. What did you see here that surprised you, that shocked you, that you wouldn't believe, like it was an upworthy post?
Oh, goodness. There's a lot of... It's just a lot of industry stuff, which isn't upworthy at all.
Different than CES, right?
I think a lot of that stuff happens at CES, but kind of more behind closed doors and just... You know, happening in meetings.
You've got like giant halls here for industry people and, you know, those kind of meetings and like backhaul stuff and networking things and enterprise and, you know, the stuff that is, like I say, probably at CES, but tucked away in a corner. Mobile World Congress, you come and it's got its own giant building, so.
People like Alcatel are showing off network equipment right across from a booth from Nokia or Samsung.
Right.
It's really weird to see those people taking up so much booth space.
First time in Barcelona. How do you like the city?
I think it's amazing. It's my first time in Europe as well.
Really?
So.
What?
I have no idea.
It gets better.
So I'm getting introduced to...
Hang on. Andrew, tell everybody how old you are.
I am 24 years
old. Oh, my God!
So much life ahead of you.
I like it a lot, though. A few weird stops on the train aside, I'm making it around, getting down to the Fira, the new Fira without any issues, and walking around and having a good time.
My point is really, like, this is a hell of a lot of work, but it's a hell of a lot of fun. It's fun for us to all get together, I think. Kevin and I are hugging right now. You can't see it. But... It's cool to do. So let's actually talk about what we saw. What do you guys want to start with? I'll let you pick.
Doesn't matter. Go in order, right? Windows Phone Saturday morning.
Sunday was Microsoft.
Sunday one. Sorry, yeah, Microsoft.
Yeah, Microsoft had their little shindig. So they're not here in an official capacity, but they still had an off-site location. It's actually the same hotel that they've been hosting for the last few years.
Oh, over there at Espana?
Hotel yeah. Juan Ray Carlos?
No.
Ray Juan
yeah,
Carlos.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah.
And so they usually do that. They take a lot of meetings during the week. So besides this one day that they had for the media, you know, this is where all the carriers and different partners were coming in. And so on Sunday, they had a press event, and we didn't know really what to expect. We imagined they were going to talk about some Windows 8 stuff, maybe Windows Phone 8.1, which they still haven't acknowledged publicly. But it turns out they actually had a few announcements, including new Snapdragon support for 200, 400, and 400 LTE chipsets, which will help drive down the cost of Windows phones in general. And they also announced a Qualcomm reference design for OEMs who can then basically copy that and just make Windows phones. So they really lowered the bar for hardware manufacturers who used to have to put special Windows keys on their devices. Now, with 8.1 coming out in the spring, they can avoid that. So in theory, HTC could make an HTC One and just boot it up with Windows Phone 8.1 and it'll be just fine. So they're getting rid of all that hardware differentiation to hopefully make it easier for Android. So that was kind of interesting. They also announced new hardware partners, including the return of LG, the arrival of Lenovo, and Foxconn was also on board there, and a couple other Chinese manufacturers, and I believe an Indian one too.
It was interesting how excited everybody was about Foxconn being there. Same thing for BlackBerry, actually.
Yeah.
Like holy crap, this company that's been making our phones all this time is now officially making our phones.
Yes. So Foxconn's an ODM, original device manufacturer.
Which is what actually kind of HTC started.
And that's what absolutely. HTC was, yeah. Right. Yeah, so HTC used to make their PPC 6700 back on Sprint. It was under a name AudioVox, but it was actually made by a company called HTC.
Dan is old, by the way.
Yeah.
Man. AT&T and, Tilt.
Well, that's it. That came after.
Nice try there.
That was made by HTC.
Yes, it was.
But yeah, so these companies, and I think Foxconn's going to probably try to do the HTC thing too, which is bust out, because they are becoming more and more known. They're starting to use their name now. A lot of these companies are meeting behind the scenes. Foxconn was actually here presently. Kevin, we saw him this morning.
Terry Dow, yeah.
For at the BlackBerry meeting, where they're also making a BlackBerry phone. So these guys make a lot of the devices we use. And so it's kind of interesting. But yeah, so, and Windows 8.1 Update 1 comes out in a couple of weeks, and they basically made it more friendly for mouse and keyboard users. Although Microsoft was heavy to stress that this was not a retraction of their focus on touch displays. I think they're just trying to appease basically all broad categories of consumers. I mean, Windows 8 does need a little improvements here and there, but there's nothing drastic changing in it. So, but yeah, it was overall a pretty fun day.
But that's not even like the big Microsoft. Well, it's not even Microsoft. Let's talk Nokia for a second.
So yeah,
you and I went to the Nokia briefing at 8:30 in the morning. It was early. Yeah. Oh.
So of all the news for this event, I think this one was the one that was the most anticipated as far as controversy. We knew Samsung was going to probably do the Galaxy S5.
Sure.
And we know kind of what was coming. So those were exciting to look forward to. But this one was
this was like new and different and like...
And there's drama. There's a lot of drama involved with it. So basically, yeah, Nokia announced the Nokia X. And
I love that name, by the way.
It's not a bad name. And they actually introduced what surprised us was three devices. The Nokia X, the X Plus, and the XL, which is a 5-inch device. All running a forked version of Android 4.1, and on top of it is a customized UI that looks a lot like Windows Phone.
And when Dan says forked, he basically means Android without Google.
Right. So this is, they took out all the Google services, and if you want to run Android apps on it, you can. It runs about 75% of all apps, and those that don't just need to be submitted to the store, and they run through a checker, and they usually need 1 to 3 API changes.
So I actually tried this while we were sitting around. So a couple things I've done. I took the AC and WPC apps and I just tried that. They're the same app basically. And I sideloaded it onto the Nokia X. I forget which one. I think I did it on the XL and the X. Works just fine. So no problems there. I also used their little app checker and it went through in like 30 seconds. Done. Says it was fine. And I've also submitted the WPC and AC apps to the store. I'll do the rest later. So that was interesting. Not a bad look.
But somebody that makes a game that integrates with Google Play games
or
Google Cloud messaging.
Anything,
all those things are going to have to be completely reworked.
No, not completely reworked.
Well, they have to come up with a new back-end cloud messaging system and all that stuff.
So it's going to take some work for development, and that's the question. Dan's been talking to people this week. I've been talking to people this week. I mean, the big question is why? Why make an Android device? Dan, what's your take on that?
I mean, Nokia is sticking to their guns here that the reason is that there is a new category of buyer out there. They're young. They want a smartphone. They don't have a lot of money. Now, we're talking specifically here emerging markets, like in China, India, and parts of
growth markets,
South Africa.
Is what Elop called them, yeah.
Yeah, and so this is the next... The rate there is about four times the growth of the regular markets that we have here in the West. And so there's a tremendous amount of opportunity. But their Asha devices weren't quite doing what they wanted to, and the Windows Phone devices, even though with the Lumia 520 being so cheap, is still not cheap enough. Now,
What about Android makes it cheap, though? That's my question coming out of all this.
Oh, that's so easy to answer that, Phil.
Yes.
Economies of scale. They can buy the components that everybody else in the Android hardware manufacturing space is buying.
That has nothing to do with...
Yes, it does. What? They can buy the stuff cheaper than if they do need custom specs.
It's the same stuff that's in Windows Phone.
They
often use a lot of the exact same components.
Yeah.
But now they can use the exact same components.
No.
I don't think that makes sense.
That's what the Nokia told us today when we asked them in an interview.
Then they were feeding you a lot.
You offset that with the additional development costs of having to come up with all this new stuff.
Yeah.
That's no way that
some cost. They have 30,000 employees.
Go back to the HTC 8X. Exact same phone that's running on Android. Exact same phone.
That's true.
So what that was a little bit of the argument, but I think a lot of it was focused on the fact that Android just is, controls, nearly 70% of the market according to ABI.
Not enough.
And so, that's a tremendous amount of market that can't be ignored. So should Nokia just continue to try to sell a 520 or try something different? And so what they're doing is they're trying to give choice to consumers going, hey, you can run, this great-looking Nokia device, and they are. They really are nice-looking. They're well-built. You got the Nokia brand. They're backed by them. The UI is actually pretty good, and it runs all Microsoft services. And so that's the selling point. And to lure developers in, they're basically saying, hey, so this is an interesting thing. Nokia has 160 carrier deals in over 60 countries for carrier billing. Now, if you're in the U.S., carrier billing ain't that big of a deal. You just put on your credit card. A lot of these emerging markets, they don't have access to credit cards. So carrier billing is absolutely crucial. And no one does that better than actually Nokia. It's better than Google. It's better than Apple.
Nokia has been doing carrier billing a lot of time.
Yeah,
better than both.
It wasn't insignificant when Android finally got it.
Yeah.
Because it took a while.
This is like a key thing for emerging markets. And so that's Nokia's sort of linchpin here for developers. They're going, hey, they're not trying to lure new Android developers. They just want to go to current Android developers. Like, hey, just take your app, put it in our store, and you're going to make more money because we're going to put this in markets that are explosive growth markets and we're going to give them to customers who can quickly buy things through their carriers, through in-app purchases and everything. And that's not an insignificant,
mm-hmm.
And that's a big deal because Google's really been trying to court developers into, offering their apps in, new areas where they're expanding the Play Store because by helping them out with in-app purchases and additional billing options, app translation services and all that kind of stuff. Because a lot of these, be it some kind of crazy carrier deals or manufacturer deals, the apps just aren't available in all of these areas. So I could see that being a market for Nokia.
Yeah, so that's one of their main... But what they're trying to do, though, is once you... They get... So one of the reasons why Android developers don't make Windows Phone apps, it's not like they're just anemic towards Windows Phone. They're like, oh, God, I'll never touch that. It usually has to do with one simple thing, money. They just don't have the money to afford
the time and the...
Yeah, and that's a legitimate, issue. So Nokia is basically going, hey... If you jump on with this, we'll try to make you money. We'll support you. And Nokia does have great developer relations. And so but if your app makes money, maybe you'll want to make that Windows Phone app. And then they have their what's called Develop, which is their internal developer program for Windows Phone. And that's a really good program for helping people get through the Windows Phone process. And so the idea is basically to feed current Android app makers into the Windows Phone system, but by both growing the economy with those developers and then giving them an easy on-ramp onto Windows Phone.
And it's been really interesting for me to listen to this because it's similar to what I've heard from BlackBerry for the last year and a half.
Right.
The difference is, with BlackBerry, it was on the same platform. So let's say an Android developer put their Android app into BlackBerry World and started making money, and then they decided to build a native BB10 app. They could replace the Android app with the BB10 app, keep the same download stats and everything on the same listing. This is totally messed up, though, because it's two different stores.
Right.
So you're going to lose everything when you build your Windows one app.
Because we put the AC app in BB World, and everyone's like, well, it's not a native app.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that wasn't really the idea. And I think maybe that's...
It was just a quick onboard.
It's, right.
That's what BlackBerry wanted us to do.
And that's exactly what we've done with Nokia here. Yeah. It's like, here's the Android app. It's now running on this... Look, the Nokia X is an Android phone.
Yeah,
I mean, call it anything other than.
And as what people have been, I think astutely pointing out is that Microsoft isn't at war against Android; they're at war against Google, and it's the Google services that are on Android that are the real battle of the business.
That's the money.
Yeah, Android itself, it's just a delivery system for Google services.
Exactly.
If you rip that stuff out, which is what this is, and replace it all with Microsoft services and here services, well, you basically just have another platform that's going to subserve Microsoft's interests.
Dan just explained this better than the 15 clickbait stories I've read over the past 2 weeks.
Only 15.
Only 15.
Hype beast.
And you know what the funny thing is? This is something Verizon tried to do back in the day.
Yeah.
Back in the early, I forget if it was the Galaxy S1 or Galaxy S2 days, Verizon took these phones and they stripped out some of the Google services.
That was the Galaxy S with the Bing.
Was it the original S? Yeah. And they put in Bing. You had Bing Maps and Bing Search. And I think Google put their foot down pretty hard, and rightfully so. I get that.
Yep.
That makes sense. I have no problem with what Nokia has done here. This, again, is what Android was designed to do. It is a framework for doing all this other crap.
My question is long-term. Is this just a play for Nokia? So Microsoft seems to be kind of cool with it. They were here today. They were on stage with Nokia. They were playing with the Nokia X. They were boasting about OneDrive and the services working on it, and they said, we're fine with this. But I have a bigger question, which is this it? In other words, are they just going to stop with Nokia and, in theory, I could see Microsoft offering its own alternative service packages to OEMs who want to basically make their own version of Android and being like, you don't have to do all the Google stuff. You can just put our stuff on there instead. And then you can actually have these two different versions of Android out there. And that could be real interesting. I don't know if that's...
It is. Look, I mean, it's not... It is exactly like what Amazon has done.
Right.
And I have absolutely no problem with that. I think Amazon's done it better. The hardware is better.
Sure.
The implementation is better. The Nokia stuff is based on Android 4.1, by the way, so it's old.
Yeah.
Not that Amazon is up to date, but this is what Android was built to do, and people are doing it with
the story,
it.
The great. Story isn't that Nokia has made an Android phone. The story is what they're doing with it. It's, in the weeks leading up to this event, all the talk has just been Android, Android, Android. Nokia's making an Android phone.
Right.
But... It's got nothing to do with what's underneath it. You look at it, it doesn't look like Android.
Right, yeah.
It's what they're going to do with it. They're creating a whole new platform.
They made the tiles that look like the Windows Phone. You can move them around and shrink them. I mean, it's almost bizarre to see it.
That's the one thing that I see is, like you said, is this a long-term play that's then going to end up confusing people? Because it, on the surface, it can be like, oh, this is a Nokia phone. It kind of looks like that. This other Nokia phone kind of looks like that also.
As long as
things don't look like, don't work the same.
If you can get your apps, for a lot of the average consumers, especially buying the lower-end phones, as long as it's a phone, it texts and rings people, it's got a camera and you can get your apps on it, they won't necessarily care whether it's Windows Phone or Android. Sure.
This is a really important point that was made.
I think they're trying to erase that distinction, yeah.
This is the thing, and I don't know if this has been written or not, but Nokia's play here is not to grow a new market around this. They're already selling 200 million smartphones feature phones in the past year at a sub $50 price point.
And they announced some more this week, by the way.
Right. They're still selling 200 million a year, okay? This is simply so they can kill off feature phones and replace those people with smartphones. People who walk into the store don't even know what the frick Android or anything is, don't give a crap.
And this is the new phone for the
to replace them with Microsoft services phones instead of Google services phones.
But my kind of point is the next step for them is it going to be another Android phone?
Or
is it going to be another Windows phone?
That was the question.
It's another, whatever the cheapest phone is. It's the Nokia X. They might never get off the platform.
Well, it's all about having aspirational products that then people step up.
Dan and I asked them about that. Yeah. And it was kind of like, well, what's to keep me from switching over to a full Android phone? And they're going to keep some of those people, I think. And that was the idea.
It's definitely an interesting play. It's an aggressive move because it's like, if you just reverse this, you know, and do a little thought example. Like, what if Google took Microsoft's Windows Phone operating system, ripped out all the Microsoft stuff, and then put Google services in there and started selling it in, like, emerging markets? Like, that would be a pretty huge story,
too.
You
have a crappy OS with a... Well, sorry, I'm thinking... No, I'm thinking back to Windows Phone.
No, not Windows, Windows Mobile. No, like, yeah. Windows Phone with just, like, Google
or
everything.
Or Windows Mobile days,
actually,
yeah.
Some people would actually like that, want that, and I don't necessarily blame them.
You and I talk late at night about the old Windows Mobile days.
But I think, you know, like... If that were to happen, it couldn't, of course, happen. But, I mean, if it did, like, people would be like, oh, my God, Google's being really aggressive to do this.
Yeah.
And I think this is just a, you know, it's an aggressive move by Nokia and Microsoft.
It's a calculated play at calculated markets, none of which is us and probably anybody or a lot of people listening to this. Well, I say that. It was funny watching the live blog Monday morning. I mean, we had twice – I think we had twice as many people watching the live blog for the Nokia stuff than we did for the Galaxy S5.
Yeah,
I mean, people are just intrigued about it.
Right? Well, that it's a very big, it's a very very big world out there.
A lot of people have been buying Nokia phones for a lot of years. I mean, I got one when I was 15, and I'm 29 now.
I think all of us,
you know, it's a long time.
I think we tend to forget that a little bit. In the same way that I tend to not appreciate how big BlackBerry is, which, by the way, is another story. And we haven't even talked about BBM coming to Windows Phone and coming to to Nokia X and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, so that was the other announcements. Yeah, BBM is finally coming. There were also a couple of... Oh, Facebook Messenger is finally getting a dedicated app for Windows Phone. So that's all coming down the line. Yeah, you know, this. What's also really fascinating about all this Android stuff is it feeds into this other rumor Mary J. Foley got a hold of, which is that Microsoft is, like, considering Android in some capacity with Windows 8 and Windows Phone. And as hard as that is to believe...
We've heard rumors about... There's been, dual booting, blah.
Yeah, and we don't actually know what that means. Is it dual booting? Does it mean it's going to support some, you know, emulation layer? I have no idea. But they're considering doing something. I'm wondering if it feeds in from this purchase of Nokia. They're going, hey, we got this Android Nokia thing now. Maybe we can do something with
it. I mean,
one thing I want to say about the Nokia X phones, too, is they're dual SIM, right?
Yes.
Which is interesting because Windows or Microsoft just announced dual SIMs coming to Windows Phone with 8.1 later this year. You know, Nokia wants to go after emerging markets, low price points, quick. It's a big feature, and they just shortcutted it by going Android again.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, that's a market thing more than anybody. I was talking to the HTC guys about that tonight. Like, we always freak out because the new HTC 816 is dual SIM. Mm-hmm. That has exactly to do with the market that they are targeting that phone for and nothing else.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Especially in the States, we freak out. Oh, my God, it's dual SIM. Like, it's some... technology that hasn't been around for years.
I've been to Indonesia, right? And the reason you want dual SIM is because the network coverage is so bad that in one area of the city, one carrier might work well. On the other end, it might not. Or a lot of people are on prepaid cards.
You put that much.
And they want to milk every penny they can before they toast, and they don't have time, so they carry the backups.
You put that much more nicely than the folks I talked to tonight.
Okay. No, it's a... Just harsh reality of the infrastructure in some of these areas.
So let's transition to BBM. Or not just BBM, but BlackBerry. So BlackBerry, oh my God, had news this week.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I made the flight, right? I'm not going to fly to Barcelona if there isn't some news. So I had an inkling that some things would happen. 7 press releases hit on Tuesday, and we did have the BBM for Windows Phone announcement on, I guess, Monday or Sunday, whenever that happened, Monday. So we got a few things. You know, 2 new phones announced today. But not in the, you know, hey, let's play with them hands-on sort of style. One is the low-cost, affordable entry phone, the Z3, which is, you know, being purpose-built initially for Indonesia. Sub-$200 phone in U.S. dollars. So maybe still a little pricey compared to some of the stuff like, you know, the Nokias there, which are the Xs, which are in the, well, I guess in the Euro range in the 80s. So $150, $140 range. Coming out in April.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What is this that I'm about to drink?
Water from the tap, I wouldn't do it unless you want to sit on it.
Okay, sorry, continue.
Okay.
I drink the tap water.
Yeah, okay.
Can regret that.
No, so Z3, low-cost BlackBerry phone, but, you know, some people are excited about it. The out-of-left-field thing they announced was the Q20, a.k.a. the BlackBerry Classic.
Yes.
And
this thing looks awesome, by the way.
No,
we haven't seen it. They didn't show it off. We had a reader.
I've seen the pictures.
No. That was a reader in our forums who mocked it up. We blogged it as a mock-up, then analysts started retweeting it and it spread.
Yeah, even BlackBerry was a little bit like, too real.
We caused a little bit of headache with the mock-up today, but, you know, that's what we do best. The big news there is they're basically adding back to the physical keyboard BlackBerry 10 phone the what they call the tool belt, which is the trackpad in the middle with the menu key, back key, and the call and hang up buttons, which they removed on the Q10, and a lot of people have not liked their Q10s. And this is something we've experienced. I've seen lots of user feedback on it where they haven't liked the Q10 at all. They would rather have the Bold 9900. Not because the Bold 9900 is better on software or apps or performance, but simply you lose the one-handed ease of use you're used to.
You've got the extra space. Like, it doesn't make it that much bigger.
No, it doesn't make that much bigger. But, I mean, the big thing, and a lot of people don't realize why would you want this? It seems old school. It's because you can hold that phone in your hand, put your thumb on the trackpad in the middle very comfortably, and move your thumb a quarter inch in any direction and have full control of the phone.
Never have to go near the screen.
Yeah, which when you're, you know, in a boardroom meeting with your hand on the table, when you shouldn't be using it while driving, you're in the grocery store walking with a screaming kid in your arm, like, you can really easily use the phone. And for that type of person who still buys that kind of phone, losing that is a horrible thing. So this is BlackBerry adding it back. I had an interview after the press announcements with their device guy, who basically said, you know, this isn't one device. This is going to be a family of devices within BlackBerry. They've sort of repositioned their device family to have, you know, affordable phones, aka the Z30, the classic series, which will be around. He made the good point saying, look, this isn't a bad thing. I mean, look at the iPhone. It's had the same freaking home button since 2007. Could they not make that a gesture? Could they not modernize it? No. It's iconic. It's what people know and are comfortable with.
So does it have SureType? Because people love that too.
People hated SureType.
Oh, okay.
Then they have their high-end phones, which
that was a joke.
BlackBerry Storm 3, wait for it.
They have high-end phones that they're working on, which the CEO alluded to today. So did the Francois Mathieu, the device guy I worked with, spoke to today, coming out. You know, it sounds like later this year, and visibly excited about it. So they're saying, you know, we're going to do some stuff. Really kick ass, more tied to this repositioning of the company as an enterprise. You know, they're basically, they want to make phones that CEOs want to use, or you know, Obama wants to use, that kind of thing, in those kinds of positions.
Just from like my, like, so I don't follow BlackBerry stuff all that often. I mean, I read BlackBerry here and there, but like, you know, my basic idea is right now that, oh, the company was kind of doomed and they were just sort of riding on fumes now and someone's going to buy them and this and that. I think what made that announcement interesting today was the fact that, yeah, two new devices they announced, and, you know, even some basic features, and that, yeah, there was some more high-end stuff in the pipeline too. They announced, you know, we'll talk about it in a minute, BES 12, yeah, and like other security stuff. And so there's a company that's clearly in motion and like had a lot to announce, and they have still a lot of stuff coming.
The question is it going forward or is it spinning its wheels?
Right. But I mean, I almost didn't expect them to spin their wheels at this point, you know, so it's almost interesting just to see the car spinning its wheels. It's like, okay, wow, you know, but it's, I don't know. I don't think their choices aren't necessarily wrong either. I think they're making some interesting, you know, they're doing what they can with what they have.
That's exactly what they're doing. So, I mean, I had a good, another interview later in the day with John Sims, who's kind of the number two guy at BlackBerry now after John Chen. He owns enterprise services. He owns BBM. He owns the NOC infrastructure. And, you know, what he said is, look, you know, later last summer after they announced their strategic review and they're up for sale, everybody was depressed. Employees were depressed. I was depressed. I think the management team was depressed. You know, BB10 launched and it didn't sell. With John Chen coming in, though, they basically said, look, you know, they did that analysis. What are the assets we have? What can we do with them? They restructured the company around these different categories of enterprise services, messaging, devices, and QNX, the embedded systems in cars. And they said every one of these four businesses has different competitors, is in a different phase, and it's going to run as its own business within BlackBerry. So BlackBerry is no longer a handset maker. If you ever describe it as that, I'm going to kick your butt.
Right.
It is a portfolio of companies in the mobile space, and that's how they operate.
That? Okay.
Did you not just listen to what I said?
Yeah, I'm just, you know.
That's what they are. Mm. That's the reality of it. And the nice thing is they waste no time. So both Chen and Sims, they basically said, look, they don't waste time waiting on decisions. They look at the reality. Waiting on making a decision is not going to make it any easier to make the tough decisions. And they have freaking cleaned house and revamped the strategy and really laid out the mandate for all employees. There are so many changes in the company, senior people who are gone in the last 90 days, new people coming in, but they are not spinning wheels. They immediately went from kind of like crashing and burning to like, okay, we're back on course. Gas pedal, but not just one gas pedal. We got four gas pedals, and they seem to be moving. The other thing that was interesting was the speed to market. So with the device discussion I had today around the Z3 launch, they're going to bring that to market in 4 months. So literally when John Chen came on board, that device got put in the pipeline like a week later. They found their partner in Foxconn, and it's going to be in hands within, you know, 4.5 months. And they said that's pretty much on that kind of platform device what they can do. Something like the Classic, where now that the software has to be re-engineered a little bit to make do for that. It's a little longer. But I think you're going to see them come up with a steady pipeline again, which is good. So exciting stuff there. I mean,
I will also say John Chen was a very hands-on, one of the most entertaining CEOs I've seen. And, you know, they're in a tough predicament, right? They could have gone a lot of different ways even after, you know, Thorsten Hines there left. Yeah. But John Chen actually looks like a pretty good CEO in the sense that he's sort of like, I don't know, he captures a lot of vitality for them and kind of makes you feel like, so it's going to be okay kind of thing.
He doesn't want to lose, right? You can tell. Yeah. He's like, you're not going to ruin my name. John Chen does not make mistakes.
he's just a very funny and affable guy. And it's a good face to have for the company, I guess. You know, it just it puts a positive image on them.
He made one funny line for Dan today during the presentation where he said, you know, I was reading a blog a few weeks back and they said, the first mistake John Chen has made as CEO was to not bring BBM to Windows Phone. He's like, I ratified that today. Yeah. John Chen makes no mistakes.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Definitely agree.
No, and then their enterprise service announcements, you know, around Bez 12, it's stuff that they needed to do. It's been a bit of a, you know, a cluster mess the last year where, you know, what they're up against is they're still number one in enterprise mobile, but that's managing a whole bunch of old BlackBerry phones.
Right.
And as these companies upgrade their phones, they don't really want to run old BlackBerry phones anymore.
Face it, BBM sucks on anything not BlackBerry still.
Not talking about BBM. I'm talking about enterprise. You just take a nap until we're
done. True statement, but not true. What we're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, no, true statement. How about Nokia?
Nope, sorry.
No. So what they're doing is they're coming up with one enterprise, you know, server solution that manages the old BlackBerrys, new BlackBerrys, and of course iOS, Android, and Windows phones. And this is actually a big deal because if you're walking around MWC, you'll see companies like Mobile Iron and Good and AirWatch with pretty big booths here. And they're all spending that money on the back of taking it away from money BlackBerry's had over the years, right? They're going after that customer base. And they're saying nasty things. You know, I think the CEO of Good yesterday just laid into, you know, they're saying very bad things about BlackBerry very openly. And BlackBerry is, with John Chen, is not taking any of it, right? So they've been retaliating. They knocked Knox a few weeks ago very firmly on their corporate blog. Because Knox is, you know, Samsung's trying to market Knox as a great enterprise solution, and BlackBerry's like, you're on crack. This is not a good solution. Here's why. And it's true, right? So Samsung's not, they're not going to let marketing dollars from Samsung just steal customers. BlackBerry's being very aggressive.
It's been, and there's a weird difference there because, like, most consumers don't know what the hell Knox is.
It's not for consumers.
Or right, yeah. Because it's not for consumers, but it's almost been marketed like that.
It's
like
true.
Like, here it's a selling point. I mean, I was at Knox briefings here a year ago, and I still have a hard time explaining to people what it is, that it's this middleware sort of thing, and that's probably not even right.
Yeah, it's for enterprises to, you know, a little bit BYOD, bring your own device, and put a secured work container on your phone
right.
So you can still use it for personal stuff, but enterprises can still be happy with what you're doing with it around apps and messaging that they have control over a certain portion of the phone. But it's just a new era for the company, very different than in the past. And, you know, it's, you definitely get the message that, you know, enterprise and servicing those needs is the priority, less about the consumer space, but that there still will be run over into the consumer space from people who care about things like productivity and security and that. So,
all right, give me your, you know, 1 minute bullet point take on what you saw this week and what the BlackBerry Nation can take out of it going into the next 6, 8, 10 months.
There's hope.
I mean, there's always hope, right? I mean, I have a lot more hope with John Chen now in the new direction, even though this isn't a year of like the Hail Mary pass and yay, we're back in the game. It's just they have a lot of hard work on all of these businesses they're pushing. None of them are slam dunks. All of them have a lot of competition, but I think the company has a very good footing now. They're basically like the world's biggest startup. You know, they have $3 billion in the bank. They have a lot of directions they can go. They have a lot of good technology. Nothing's a slam dunk. You know, there's no WhatsApp 0 to 18 billion around a really simple product right now. But there will be new devices. There will be improved software. You know, BB10 is actually much better than it was at launch. Like, they just rolled out and are finishing rolling out OS 10.2.1, which is a horrible name. But this is finally what BlackBerry 10 should have been. You can install Android APKs directly on the OS, even if they're not in BlackBerry world.
It's got better APIs.
Better APIs, better support. You know, things like Hue Lights and that are working the way they've remapped the OS. It's really funny coming back to the Nokia X announcements now, because we've had many long discussions on our CrackBerry podcast about saying, well, why didn't BlackBerry just take Android, fork it, customize the heck out of it to bring it the hub, bring over the BlackBerry services like BVM to it, and where would we be today if they did that? Because they could have done it 3 years ago, sure, and maybe been the number one Android provider, because they had more services than, say, Samsung did at that time, and a brand that wasn't yet beat to heck and everything else.
But
looking at how quickly, and we still don't know how much time Nokia spent doing this.
They've been working on it for a while, I think, just because it's based on 4.1. You don't start...
Oh, it's based on 4.1.
Yeah, so
okay.
It's based on Android 4.1. You don't start working on this 6 months ago. It's
so
still being on 4.1. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really curious, because there's going to be, in some ways, I think that Nokia X devices might be starting further ahead in some areas to where even BB10 is today, with how they've brought a lot of Android services on top of the QNX BB10 base, but they're in a very similar spot. So, I don't know. Interesting stuff right now.
I'm still curious about whether or not BlackBerry can survive as a niche smartphone maker. I mean, today we're still sort of focused on...
He just called him a smartphone maker.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no.
Well, but
one of the divisions.
Provider.
Okay.
But no, you know what I'm saying? Like, right now we're still heavily focused on how Android 70% this, and Apple's got this, and, like, it's winner take all, and how, like...
But it's really not.
It's not.
Yeah.
You know, like, Windows Phone is number three. It is a distant number three, but is Microsoft okay with that? Is that an okay thing to be? And just, you know, does everybody have to be number one in this if you're making money?
Right.
You know? And that's an interesting thing, whether or not we haven't seen if a company can sort of survive as a niche provider, which perhaps BlackBerry might be.
I had an interesting conversation with another manufacturer about that tonight. I can't say which one. But the question was like, look, basically the question is, do you have to beat Samsung? So I guess that means I wasn't talking to Samsung. They're absolutely the big player in the room, right? Do you have to be that successful?
Yeah.
Do you have to sell more phones and make more money? And the answer is no. There are different, we talk about pieces of the pie, and there are different pies is what it comes down to. There's a different pie for each company, I think.
I look at it as the automotive industry is the best example. There's no one best car. Some people need minivans. Some people want sports cars.
Yep.
And there's room for a lot of manufacturers in the space. I think the biggest thing is every manufacturer needs to be profitable in whatever they're making. So coming back to Dan's point,
right,
you know, again, what John Chen did right away was he said, we need to quit losing money on phones, because they've been taking a bath on phones, BlackBerry. That's why they went to Foxconn. Foxconn is now holding the inventory risk, partnering on design costs. But basically, they won't lose money on phones going forward because Foxconn is the partner who's going to take that risk for them.
And they're not beholden to some imaginary line that they have to cross to win. It's ultimately to the shareholders.
Yeah, so the shareholders in the same business. Now, what BlackBerry's new approach is, I think, to be a niche provider. That's exactly it. So something like that BlackBerry Classic, it is not a growth device. It's
going
to cater to 20 million people in the world or something. But if they can sell 20 million of them every 2 years... and they own 100% of that market, it's okay. I mean, the analogy we used earlier was, I even looked, using a car analogy again, it's like manual transmissions, you know, versus automatic. We live in a world where everybody wants, you know, the majority of cars are automatic transmissions, APA, touchscreens, and this and this.
They are on your side of the world, I mean.
Sure. Some people prefer manuals for preference. Some people prefer it for mileage, you know, the utility factor of it. And there's room for both. It's like...
Well, the interesting thing, I think you just have to be honest with yourself as a company. You just be honest about what you think that you can accomplish. And if you can kill that market, there can always be growth later. But like you said, if you're taking a bath on every single phone and you're just trying to keep pushing something else, and you're just going to keep on losing money.
This,
and then you're
this
gonna
was
lose.
Your early Android race of, you know, three years ago, right? A million phones getting released. Everything's like lasting 2 months. It's not sustainable. So now you're back to like an annual cycle or maybe 9 month cycle for devices, even from Samsung and HTC on their heroes.
And look at these like small niche manufacturers in, you know, a place in China or something where they'll go out and they sell a million phones or a half a million phones.
Which is all they needed.
If they're a small manufacturer and they're, you know, they just do things just in time, they make a run and then they sell out and they were profitable, you can't say that they weren't a failure because they didn't sell 40 million phones in 150 countries.
I agree.
You know, they could be, you know, that manufacturer later, but, you know, Samsung didn't just come out of the gate selling, you know, 20, 30 million phones every quarter. It just didn't happen like that.
It's kind of unfair to keep comparing people to Samsung, though, because it's just...
They're a city. They're literally sitting.
They have other businesses than smartphones. They have the cash to throw at marketing and making all these different devices, and they can just, I mean, they've sponsored the last two Olympic Games as part of their marketing strategy. Because they could just throw that kind of money at
them. They could take a wash on every phone, but they don't. I mean, because they make, you know, microwaves and cars and bulldozers and things. So
it's almost like you need that to fall back on if you want just the marketing money and all the funds to put behind putting out something that's going to compete with the iPhones of the world, the Galaxy S5s of the world.
I would argue, sorry, side note that you just brought up, is that I would argue that even if Samsung made no money on phones, but they just continue to throw money and get the market share, it's worth it as marketing their brand across everything they make.
Right.
It raises like the level of Samsung. Well, I buy a Samsung fridge over a whatever fridge.
And look at the way that Samsung, just their name has become, you know, synonymous with all kinds of consumer electronics now, where they used to be like the cheap television provider, and now they're one of the top of the line ones. They've just brought their brand up to more of a prestige level.
So subconsciously, you buy a Samsung smartphone, you're like, okay, I'm going out for a new TV. You might not specifically go and, you know, want to buy a Samsung TV, but you know what? You go in the store, you've got a Galaxy S4, a Galaxy S5. That Samsung TV looks nice.
It's kind of funny, like, it's generational. You know, my parents, probably yours, Phil, everybody used to think, like, Sony was the best TVs. Buy Sony. Sony's the high-quality VCR TV. And, you know, in my house, I have three Samsung TVs.
And all shifts, too, right? Hondas were frowned upon in the U.S. in the 70s. They were just cheap, junky cars.
And we'll see another shift at some point.
Dad drives a Honda.
Now I drive a Honda. Now it's Kia's turn, right? Now Kia's are becoming the new Hondas. It's
who's
so fascinating.
Who's?
So let's shift over. I don't want to talk forever about Samsung. Alex and I did another podcast on that, specifically on the GS5. And the that would be the Galaxy S5 if you've been living under a rock.
The Samsung.
Stop it.
Can I just say, I think it's pretty cool that you have the iPhone 5S and the Galaxy S5.
My brain is so just fried.
It's just like, this has been an epic battle.
I do want to hear from the rest of you guys, though, not me and Alex. And even though Alex played with it, I want Alex to talk a little more because he played with it more today. But Kevin, what have you seen out of all that you care about, that interested you?
Of the S5?
The S5 and the watches.
Sure. First, I've been using a Galaxy S4 all week. That's been my primary driver out here. One, because, you know, we love Google Hangouts, and I've professed my love for it on the AC podcast. But looking at the S5 announcement and compared to what I'm using in the S4... I like the look of the back cover. I think it's some of the photos, it looks a little bit like I'm using the word Gaudi since we're in Barcelona. It's a little bit like they're trying to be stylish, and I'm not sure it's the optimal style.
Were they my pictures or somebody else's?
Yours are beautiful pictures.
Thank you.
They're amazing lighting.
That's what I'm
vibrance.
Getting.
No, well, your photo skills are possibly, I mean, they trump me. I don't know if they're second to none, but they trump me.
People pointed out that the gold one looks a lot like a Band-Aid.
I feel like a Michael Jackson glove.
I heard a lot about that tonight, and I wonder how many of them have actually seen it.
It looks like a Band-Aid.
I wouldn't even say it was gold. It's more, it's like the rose gold.
It's more brownish.
It's like bronzy
tinges.
It's much more of a gold than the sort of reddish bronze in the press images. It's strange like that.
And if people make fun of the texture, just think about how many people love the texture on the back of the original Nexus 7, and it's it's somewhat similar to that before
it's
terrible.
And the kind of soft touch to it.
I think what I'm most excited about is I find the S4 to feel a little bit plasticky in hand, and from what you guys have told me, this feels a little bit firmer, a little solider.
I think me and Phil disagree a little bit on this. I wouldn't exactly call it soft touch, but it's a little bit more matte, a little bit less greasy and
slimy. It's not hard plastic.
I will disagree with that.
There's a definite texture to the back now rather than just slippery, slimy plastic.
Yeah.
That's a small part. Fingerprint scanner or a finger scanner. They don't call it a fingerprint.
How does it work compared to Touch ID?
A little bit.
Yeah. So far.
Touch ID
It's a swipe.
It's a swipe. Yeah, Touch ID is just your finger.
I like the idea of piggybacking on top of an action that your finger does in the first place, so I think Touch ID has a beat there.
Okay.
Versus a swipe. It's just...
But the accuracy,
Well, telling Alex today that we really need 2 weeks using it every day, authenticating things before you find out, oh, it only works like 60% of the time, and you're still getting prompted for passwords.
Yeah, because, Touch ID isn't... I mean, it's really, really good, but it fails sometimes, you know? if your hands are a little greasy, it doesn't work. You know, sometimes, I mean, it's always asking me for my password to buy things.
You have blood on your hands.
It's not.
It's terrible.
So, you know, but
I was going to say, they've never tested it minus 40 in Winnipeg, because that's when it fails.
But,
it's like,
but
I think your skin cells shrinking. Your fingerprints are no longer the same.
There's no circulation in your
hand
anymore.
I'm like, what the hell is this thing?
What about the idea of they packed a lot of fitness stuff into this? Kevin's been big on exercising lately and makes the rest of us look bad. Yeah. Are you actually going to stop and check your heart rate on your phone while you're doing all
this?
No,
you know what's funny now, and I've been buying a lot of tech stuff this year, and last year I had a lot of health tech stuff I was using. This year I just hit rock bottom and said, screw it, I need to make healthy lifestyle decisions. I pretty much quit using health tech because you know what? Tracking steps and all that is not going to make you lose a bunch of weight.
It's not going
to
actually.
You need to go to the gym and go to your rate of puke.
You
need to eat healthy.
Think about your fitness all the time.
Yeah.
And if you're not actually doing anything, you're just tracking really bad fitness numbers.
Exactly. I mean, I like the scale as a check-in a couple times a week and have that Wi-Fi connected. But other than that, at this moment in my life, I'm getting the biggest health gains by just ignoring it and freaking sticking to my guts and not.
I would love to see you.
But it looks good. The wristband looks good. The gear too. So I mean, I think the gear too is a big improvement. For me, I don't care if it's Tizen or Android, as long as, you know, how does it work and where's the compatibility. I think it's a little sad that it's still. I would love to see Samsung kind of just say, look, it can work with any
absolutely
Android or iOS device.
I get it, but I completely agree, Andrew. You got your first look at it yesterday?
And especially after after reviewing the original one, I definitely think that, like Kevin said, the design decisions have greatly improved, with the band not being, you know, so integral to everything. You'd swap the bands, and they're talking about doing, having different designer bands or whatever that
means. We've seen some,
right, so it's definitely moving the right direction, and I know that the original Galaxy Gear got software updates to improve some of the functionality, so I like to see that they're iterating in both hardware and software that's actually improving. That's actually, you know, what we wanted them to do if they're going to release it, so the new one so quickly after the first. I think they're moving in the right direction, but again, it only works with Samsung phones, and we can go on for days and days about why that is, but it's just, that's a big, you know, you can make it work fantastically, but if I don't like to use a Samsung phone all the time, then, and especially if it's tied in with everything, why do I want to have it on my wrist?
I think it's easy to overstate how much of an issue that is for average, like normal people who aren't us. Because if you're one of the millions and millions of people who buy, and the number of supported phones is growing every day.
Right.
So if you're one of the millions and millions of people who has one of these like 17 or 18 devices now that it supports them, it's going to be an easier decision to pick up a Gear 2 now that it's just an easier size. It's less clunky. The battery life is best. It's more tempting to pick up along with you, your new S5 or whatever.
And a regular consumer that buys on a 2-year contract as well. You buy that watch, you're going to keep the same phone for 2 years. You've got 2 years. Yeah, I mean, like in watch terms, 2 years is nothing.
But in smartwatches
aren't going to be like a Rolex that you keep forever. Either,
right,
so.
In smartwatch terms could be something. I mean, you bring up the US point, and I think that was actually part of the issue with, I mean, of course, the original Gear was really expensive. The Gear was the same exact price as the Note 3 on contract. So you're talking about, yes, it's just $300, but it's also doubling the price of the purchase up front. And to, you know, Samsung wants that because you say, oh, I get $300, I get my Note, another $300, I get my Gear. But that's still really expensive. You're talking about doubling the price. And of course, that's good because it locks people in. They say, oh, I don't want to buy, you know, spend another $300. But that's a lot of outlay if you use an iPhone 5 or 4S or whatever, and you're looking for an upgrade, then you're saying, oh, it's going to cost me $600 to get in on this. What if I don't like it? Then I'm stuck. And then you kind of forces your hand on getting another Samsung phone because you're so invested. So, obviously it works for Samsung. Maybe it doesn't work for everybody.
I'm going to throw out a completely unfounded rumor here and say that I don't think either the S5 or any of the new Gears will be $300 each. How about that?
I mean,
crickets.
Even if it goes to 200 and 200, right?
That's a bit more reasonable.
That's far more reasonable, but it's still doubling the purchase price of the phone to add an accessory. And, you know, how big is that addressable market? You don't really know in the first place, but
it obviously needs to not be $300. I think we could settle on that.
Did you guys see anything today that we didn't see in our previous time with the GS5?
So I'm trying to think. We got a better look at the camera app. We saw HDR. We saw, I forget the exact name of it. It's kind of a virtual tour mode, which is a bit difficult to describe. It's kind of like Photosphere, but with you moving around a room. So you can sort of swipe through and it takes you on a virtual tour of the environment that you've scanned. It's difficult to explain, difficult to show because the units were all in a relatively small room. But I think that's going to be interesting to try out in the real world. Just the capture speeds and focus speeds of the camera as well were really impressive.
They didn't oversell that in Unpacked at all. I mean, the autofocus is fast.
It's pretty damn
fast. The HDR processing, again, you know, it's you hit the shutter button, boom, it takes a picture. Presents it, so
you can expand the camera app with stuff from Samsung apps now. I'm not sure you could do that before. I think that's new. So there's a relatively some stuff's been moved to the settings menu now, so HDR lives there. You get a relatively small number of shooting modes. Some stuff has been moved into what's called shot and more, so that's where things like eraser mode and best photo live. So you basically just select this mode, you take a bunch of photos, and it works out based on the context. Whether you want an eraser shot, whether you want to get rid of something in the background, whether you want to select the best shot from multiple ones, it just eliminates the choice of, you know, having this bunch of being overwhelmed by all these photo features and not knowing which one you want to choose.
And that weird carousel just mucking up like a quarter of the
screen. Yeah, that's gone, so that's a good thing. We've also got kids mode. We played around with that a little bit. It's
yeah, somebody told us the password to get out of it, so
you kind of get locked in a kids mode.
And this was like, I think some people were saying this at the event last night. They were trying it out, and then you need a pin. Obviously, you need the pin code to get so the kids can't get out.
Another funny thing that, all these GS5s obviously have the fingerprint technology. They're in this demo area. About five or six of them, I think today and a few of them yesterday as well, were just locked to random people's fingerprints because they've been messing around with the sensor.
unattended media people had been left with a fingerprint scanner. So
a few of the crowd of action.
Everyone's shooting hands-on videos with the finger scanner. Let the fingerprints register afterwards. So the phones are locked and it's like gradually as you go down the... I can imagine as it went through the day, gradually the number of devices people could actually use was just progressing towards the exit.
Yeah, so and the NSA has them on now.
Well, I was just saying that.
And so does PayPal.
They said the fingerprint never leaves the device.
Of course they did. So does Apple. So does it.
That's probably true.
We'll see.
But no, all right, let's move on from Samsung.
I had a flashback to an earlier conversation. Bring it up. So coming back to, was it really cheaper to build, you know, for them to build the Nokias with Android? And I said, you know, buy the components because it's economies of scale. And he said, no, that's crap.
Right.
The reasoning is not just the component costs. It's that it's the time and effort you have to put into testing those components on a different platform. So with Android phones, you have so many companies taking those components and testing them against whatever version of Android you're putting it on. It works immediately. You can buy the components knowing they're going to work without having to retest them.
That's just not
Qualcomm and Google, where they put out packages that are supportive for the.
But I'm saying if you buy those Android components, like on the 8X that work with Windows Phone, now a company needs to put in all that effort testing those raw components.
It depends on more what kind of software tweaks you're putting into them.
But compatible and perfectly running are completely different things.
Yeah.
Android will run on a lot of different chips, and it's certified to run on a lot of different chips. We see a lot of phones that are released with very, very little optimization to the hardware. You can't just put hardware in there that says it's compatible, slap an AOSP build on there, and just expect it to run well. There's still a lot of customization that has to happen on top of that, and that takes time and money.
There's a reason the Moto X, I think, in many ways, is better than the Nexus 5. And a lot of that is customization on Motorola side of the software. Same goes for HTC. Like, I mean, yeah, you can take Google and you can put a Google Play Edition HTC One. It's just not the same.
But that's already at the user interaction level. I'm talking about just getting hardware, drivers, mapping.
Yeah, so are we.
It still takes customization to make it work properly, to get it, you know, stable enough to where it's, you know, you're getting any kind of benefit after.
There's a reason there's still Samsung code in the Galaxy Play Edition GS4. And there's still HTC code in the One. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I think that's one of the reasons for Nokia to
that one
save time to market and cost to market.
Right. I think. Sony, what did you guys see at Sony this week?
So Sony announced three new devices. We had the Xperia Z2, the Xperia Z2 tablet, and the Xperia M2. The Z2 is, on the surface, it seems a lot like the Z1. It seems like a lot of iterative updates. But really, there are a lot of different things that really add up over time to make a pretty solid improvement over Z2, over Z1 rather. They're on KitKat now. They've got a beautiful new screen in this thing. Sony phones have always struggled in the past with viewing.
If you've seen the improvement that the compact was over the Z1,
this is better still.
And this is you have to see it, but it's really, really, really.
It's a fantastic screen. Sony has bizarrely struggled a long time for a company that has history in TVs and displays. It's strange they've struggled with smartphone displays, but that's basically fixed in the Z2.
It almost seems like they were trying to fix hardware with software.
Maybe a little bit. I mean, they've always had the Bravia engine, which is designed to sort of boost contrast, reduce noise in videos and photos. That works reasonably well. They've sort of toned it down a little over the past few years.
They said something similar with the tablet to us as well, that when we asked them about the resolution, we're sticking with where they're at. Rather than boosting the resolution, they're putting the other technologies that they have at their disposal into there to make it an awesome viewing experience rather than just cramming pixels.
And surely there are benefits to that in battery life as well. If you look at it, they've got, a 6,000 milliamp hour battery in there.
And of course, talking about screens as well, the little break-exclusive we got today.
So yeah, Sony's used these fixed screen protectors on all of their phones for like the past 3 years, and they're horrible.
Andrew's over there shaking his hand at them.
Anyone who's used a Sony phone for any length of time, it's maddening, these things. It makes the phone feel like plastic when it's glass. It smudges up, it scratches more easily than glass. We found out today, officially from higher-up Sony people, that they are no longer using it in the Z2 and the Z2 tablet, which is big news for people who follow Sony stuff.
Woohoo!
And Andrew will never again try and peel it off in a review.
No, exactly. I'll know that there's no screen protector on there.
So he won't try and pull it off.
So it's metal and glass now, and that's
it feels really nice. You can tell when you pick it up and you're touching the screen. If you've ever used one of the older ones with the anti-shatter film on, it feels different. It now feels like you're touching a glass screen.
It felt like
screen.
Your Palm Pilot with a resistive plastic screen, which you didn't want.
Huh? What? Oh, screen turned off on the computer. We're all freaking out.
I think it's
Podcast continues. HTC this week, they didn't announce anything huge for us. They announced the Desire 816. Which, by the way, I learned what that means.
The Apple's gone dead as well.
The Apple's gone dead as well.
We should probably check.
I see the light on the mic.
Oh my God. Let's check. Hey, podcast still going. And we're almost at an hour. They announced the Desire 816, which, by the way, I learned why it's called the 816 tonight.
Why is that?
8 in Asia is a very lucky number, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's 2 times 8.
16.
That's it. 816.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah, how about that? This is very much not a North American, not a U.S. one. I think it's coming to Europe eventually.
Can I just explain how true this is?
Only if you pull your shirt down, yes. It's that kind of podcast
now. I
mean,
I've been hitting the gym, but come on now.
My phone number where I live ends in 8888, and I've had offers for $10,000 to buy my phone number.
Dude, I would totally
say there's not that many people in Winnipeg. I think you just take it. You gave away your phone number.
Take it.
It is a large plastic phone. I mean, it's as you would imagine HTC doing a large plastic phone. At first, it kind of looked like an iPhone 5C. In that same sort of, I mean, everybody here is shaking their head. In fact, I've talked with...
The salmon pink, I don't know why.
Well, yeah, and you can get it in salmon. I mean, it looks like that only until you see it and see the size of it, and then you're like, all right, it kind of looks like it, but it's much bigger. And
it's huge. I mean, I saw one today at the booth. It's big. I mean, perspective of somebody holding it up on stage doesn't do it any justice at all.
The main message from HTC this week has really been, wait for March 25th.
Yeah.
So we are waiting for March 25th in London and New York. Andrew and I took a meeting with Lenovo this morning that was interesting. I mean, they have some nice new products. You've seen them already. You did a reviews of those, I think.
We took a look at the new yoga tablet on, was it Sunday night, I think? It's basically the same design as the original yoga tablet. And
I didn't realize that they're using laptop batteries in. So they're cylindrical batteries that fit into that base.
The battery life is crazy good.
Yeah, they're saying 18 hours for this new.
The design of it is like if you want a tablet in particular for media consumption, watching movies, listening to music, the kind of the flip out stand and the front facing speakers, it's absolutely brilliant for that kind of use. But the problem with the original was the software was kind of janky. It was using kind of subpar internals. It was slow and, you know, buggy. And Yeah, and the screen was pretty low resolution. I think it was 1280 by 800 at 10 inches, and that's not good enough for something that they're charging reasonable amounts of money for, especially when it's the rest of it is constructed out of metal and it's slim and you know it looks like a premium device.
Right, Lenovo can do hardware. And
yeah,
this is good hardware.
The new one is they've boosted the internals. They've now got a proper full HD screen on it.
They said they improved the hinge a little bit. And
yeah,
they
comes
changed
in gold,
the keyboard,
which obviously makes all the difference. There's a better camera on there now. Not that I would ever use it because it's still in the same place in the bottom corner.
And it's still
a 10-inch
tablet.
And it's a 10-inch tablet as well. But you know, it's nice. I mean, I'm still not sold on the kind of custom software they've put on it. But
it's,
the screen
it's meh, but it's not offensive.
No, I mean the thing I kind of
that's not really a shining endorsement, unfortunately.
Well,
you think that, I mean the thing I don't kind of get about it is you've got like the on-screen menu button constantly and like a gingerbread-esque menu on you know latest
their
versions
big
software
thing
or,
are the Do It apps that let you move
content
from your phone to your tablet to a computer without a second thought. And it was kind of cool to see. I mean,
yeah,
it's not bad.
I mean it's not a bad tablet. I mean it. I'd like to get older one and see how it compares to the original, but my frustrations with the original, a lot of them seem to have been fixed. So
absolutely,
I mean, that's definitely worth.
Absolutely nothing from them to say on the Motorola front until that deal goes through. However, Andrew tonight went to a dinner? Was it a press event? I know
it was
some blogs had positioned it as like a press event.
Well, it wasn't a press event. It was really it was a sit down Q&A session that they had somebody else from Motorola just feeding out some questions, and then they took questions from the audience, took questions from Twitter, and they had some. I'm being told to speak louder and lean forward.
Yes,
we're over an hour. I'm starting to lounge back in my chair here.
Hey, that was good. What you did right there, cool.
So it was just a bunch of Q&As, and so it wasn't really a press event. It wasn't something that you could live blog or anything like that. But obviously, with Dennis Woodside announcing that he's going to step down at the end of March as the CEO, we had Steve Horowitz, Rick Osterloh, and my brain is fried at this point.
It's okay.
And so they just took a bunch of questions, and they talked about the success of the Moto G. They said it's their best-selling and most popular smartphone they've ever sold.
Really?
Which is very interesting. Obviously,
like ever?
Smartphone.
Well,
right. So
the original Razr still holds.
Yeah, but I mean, they've sold a lot of Droids, is my thing.
Which is very interesting. Yeah, that was the point.
But not worldwide.
Right. That's just, you know, we brought up afterwards, you know, obviously the original Motorola Droid was huge, but the milestone, its unlocked equivalent that sold in Europe, was kind of terrible. And since then, you know, they've sold really well in the U.S. and really well on Verizon, but even Verizon is only a third of the U.S. market, and the U.S. market is a lot smaller than
and obviously,
all
like
the
Moto G has now hit India in the last couple, you know, in the last month
right,
as well,
right.
And that's a big market to hit, especially with a dual SIM version. It's still affordable.
And they're
a reminder of how, while Verizon is big here, all the phones they sell in a quarter over 3 months equal about, you know, 2-3 days worth of all Android activations worldwide.
Right, and you think about something like the Moto G is somewhere between $100 and $180, depending on where you go, or, you know, that equivalent in the U.S., and that's within reach of so many more consumers than even $350 or $400 Moto X. They didn't talk about, we've all kind of seen the sales number predictions for the Moto X. They weren't talking about how great that's selling. They talked about how it was generally a misstep that they only launched in the U.S. and that they only launched on AT&T. And if there was one thing they would have changed, they would have been a little more confident in themselves to launch it in multiple markets all at once. They did say that the Moto X is coming to India, speaking of another large market, as well as Australia. And then Moto Maker is coming to the U.K., Germany, and Mexico in the second quarter, which is, you know, I think...
Just in time for the future ones.
Yeah, just in time for the next one to come out a quarter later, which...
tweeted something tonight,
Somebody from the audience asked, when is a follow-up to the Moto X coming? And they said,
stay tuned for announcements later in the year about our future products.
You mean sort of in the same time frame as they announced the Moto X last year?
And the same answer
the
same answer that they gave to every other person that asked any question about anything, and the same question that we've heard asked and answered at, you know,
those questions always get asked, they always get the same answers.
But the interesting thing that it came unprompted without any question is they said that they're coming out with multiple wearable devices this year, and they said in the coming months they're going to make a watch. And they said it's going to be a watch that's like jewelry, not like a tech device, which is very interesting. That was just unprompted.
Whoa,
that's
from Moto?
From Motorola.
What?
And so they...
Dude, read Android Central.
And so they...
Dinner drinking.
And they really came out and said, we don't see Lenovo as hindering, you know, our future plans. We think that Motorola, you know, has a core set of competencies. They can do a lot of great things. And Lenovo knows how to make things happen. They said that under Google, frankly, it was hard to sell devices in China because Google just doesn't, you know, they don't get along with the Chinese authorities very well, as you can imagine. Lenovo is a Chinese company and they sell devices in China. And they said that if they have devices that are marketable to Chinese consumers, they can just slot them in under Lenovo, assuming that the deal goes through. And without any changes or anything different, they can now sell to, you know, hundreds of millions of potential customers.
And that's the thing, because like with the, like the, similar to how Nokia is putting Microsoft services on, like the ZTE phones that they brought here, they're all stacked up with Chinese services. You got Baidu on there instead of Google. And, you know, so they could, like, they could just strip out the Google stuff, put the Chinese stuff
in. If that's what it comes down to, sounds like they'll do anything, and they're just, it's not doom and gloom there. Obviously, they're not going to come out and sit down for a Q&A with the press and say that the world's ending. But they seem really positive. They seem really positive.
I don't think that's ever happened, actually.
Right. So they seem really positive about the synergies between what Motorola can do and what Lenovo can do.
Oh, you just said synergies. Really?
They said synergies.
Oh, okay.
So, and they said that Lenovo knows how to make phones and computers and tablets that are good devices that don't cost a lot of money. That's kind of what Motorola has been trying to do. Obviously, the Moto X and Moto G being so cheap, and they think that that can be a partnership that can work out really well.
Lenovo makes good hardware. It's not to everyone's taste, but laptops, tablets,
but it's not bad.
They can make good stuff. So
right, and they said that the brand, Motorola brand, is sticking around. A lot of the people are sticking around. This isn't just going to be. You know, they would not have paid so much for Motorola if they were just going to scrap the brand. That's just not worth it. And we're going to see more Motorola products, and that's what they said.
LG did a bunch of stuff. They did the Optimus. I keep saying Optimus.
RIP Optimus.
The LG
G Pro 2.
I have to stop.
And the G2
this.
Mini.
And the G2 Mini.
And a bunch
and
of other stuff.
A bunch of L devices and an F device. The G Pro 2 is bigger than the original G
Pro.
But
not by much.
Not a whole
5.9
lot.
5.9?
Considering that the screen is, like, what, nearly half an inch bigger? Actual physical
size. It's still a beautiful
size. It's so close to
it's
the original.
It's a beautiful display. The software is still LG.
Yep.
The camera is going to be pretty nice, I think. The knock code thing where you tap.
That's pretty cool.
So, Kevin, you remember knock on. You double tap to turn the screen on. Now you turn it into a code. You have a 2x2 box, and you can do whatever combination you want in there as your code. And it's actually pretty cool. I like it. So that's going to be fun to play with. The mid-range stuff is mid-range. I mean, it's not great.
And even the mid-range stuff is getting knocked up, or not.
Yeah, I mean,
that's actually...
F70 today, and that's got it in there as well.
There's a lot of kind of...
That's actually their big message from this week, is that the premium stuff is not code, but so is the mid-range stuff.
And even the accessories as well, you know, like the L-series and the F-series, they're getting, like, the quick window cases, so there's obviously differences in hardware and software, you know, design, but overall, they're all kind of... It's like one giant family of phones, and they're all...
And the interesting thing is at the top end, from the G Flex to the G2 Mini, these devices look like they were cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
And this is the new design for LG right now.
Yeah.
And they're clearly all in on it. It wasn't just the G2 and they're done. This is what they're, you know, all with the rear keys and all of the similar features, even though they may not be all premium products.
Like four size points, at least when I picked them up, the rear buttons seem to be in the right place. Whatever the size of the device, they've done to work out where to put them, I've got small hands, wherever I pick it up, in my left hand, as I always do with a phone, my hand is always around those rear buttons, even on the Mini, right the way up to the G Flex, so...
Assuming that you're going to have the buttons on the back, they're in the right place.
All right. I'm going to wrap this up because we've been going for a long time. Dan's about to pass out.
Let's turn to the Android Central podcast.
I know. No. You can't help it.
Enjoyed Dan talking about BlackBerry.
Absolutely.
Was like, what was this? I'm like, go Dan.
I have thoughts.
Next guest on the BlackBerry podcast.
Dan has feelings.
Hired.
Anything quickly on any other smartwatches that we saw this week?
Yeah, we saw a couple at PepCom.
Very quickly.
Martian was here with nothing new except their announcement that it's going to be available in the European market.
Great.
Omate was here showing off their second generation of their smartwatches. They have a steel or aluminum frame now, 30% lighter, a little bit tighter design. People not so happy about it because they're still waiting on the original design. They bought a Kickstarter to ship while the company's now announcing their second ones.
Oops.
Really interesting though, because with both those companies, you get the feeling that these are like, it's like if we said right now at this moment, let's start making smartwatches, and we, took a few months and we figured it out.
Like, I wish them the best. I think we would do a terrible job at it.
No, but I mean, we could. I feel those people. I know people. You know people. We could make it happen. But that's what I feel a lot of this game is right now, and there's going to be some bloodbaths for some of these companies. The creative director has the same business card as the president and the head sales guy. It's just like,
that's trouble.
I love the entrepreneurial spirit, but
how to do a Kickstarter to get your business card?
Yeah, but we're talking like you're up against big players now.
Yeah, so. I mean there are some big names in the room now. Everybody's making a wearable of some variety, and
that's just it. Pebble's the one startup where I cross my fingers that they're able to hold on as this game heats up. A lot of these other names that we kind of mention are, MWC 2015, do they still exist or not? We'll find out, right?
Stay tuned. Ubuntu and Firefox are still doing their thing. Anything?
Firefox had a relatively big show compared to what else they want. I mean, it's still an early platform and kind of early days for devices.
The biggest thing out of their event was they announced that they will be making a $25 smartphone. Like, this isn't like $25 on a contract. It's $25.
It's a lot like the Nokia X where, a lot of people in Western markets it's above where they're normally looking at devices.
They want to do away with the feature phone. That's right. Kind of like the big play.
Similar conversation.
Feature phone goes away. Everybody's connected. It's Firefox in particular. It's very much still a work in progress, but they showed me some of the prototype software stuff for like later on this year and into next year, and it's going in the right direction. It's starting to be more visually appealing. Their big thing is simplicity, take away all the complexities of using a smartphone, just pick it up and use it, and so it'll be interesting to see what they can do, but still a kind of a work in progress sort of thing. Same with Ubuntu. They've got the new phones here that they announced last week, but they're not actually phones, they're just dummy units. So again, they told us that those will be shipping like towards the very end of this year. So
one last thing, and then I swear I'm wrapping this up. Black phone, the so-called secure phone.
Black phone.
Anything out of that?
I mean, I tried to see it, but it was never there when I went around.
I saw it for about 30 seconds. I mean, to look at it,
it's about the services.
I mean, to look at it as a like, so if we shot a hands-on video, it would have been a pretty dull video, because to look at it, it's not a particularly visually appealing phone. It's black. It's just a black slab.
It doesn't come in.
It's got a cool name. It's kind of stealthy looking, but at the end of the day, it's all about what's underneath.
I'm kind of coming back to what I said about the smartwatch makers too, right? You got if we said today, let's go figure some stuff out, pull some people together. They're making an effort. Is that going to turn into a successful commercial venture?
Right.
I feel like it's something that somebody can run over really fast. If a company like Samsung, if a company like, BlackBerry is positioned for it right now with what they're working on, they're just saying, we want to build a secure phone for you. That's maybe the easy part. Next thing is to finish all the other business around it. I don't know what's going to happen there.
Cool. But that needs to be looked at properly. It's not a...
Yeah.
All right, Andrew's wrapping us up. Thank you, everybody.
It is 1:30.
If you're still listening to this, you are awesome.
I had espresso after our dessert, so I'm ready to rock.
I had two on the way back.
Oh, you're good, too.
Andrew had a mushroom.
We all had espresso.
He's just not okay with that.
Thank you, everybody, for sticking with us through all the content this week from Barcelona. It's been pretty incredible. It's great to be here with all these guys. We're all going to go hug it out after this, I think.
Mostly Kevin and Phil.
We are headed home. We are headed home in literally like 9 hours from the time we recorded. Well, 8 hours now. Actually, we have to leave here in 6 hours. Sorry,
yeah, guys. We're pretty much screwed.
So it's time to go pack. Thank you all. Go to all the sites /MWC Live for all the content that we've done this week. AndroidCentral.com/MWC Live. Crackberry /blah blah blah. You get the idea. And we will see you all next time. Everybody say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Love you.
Goodness. That was